today on Compassion Radio.
The very encouraging thing is seeing a bunch of people that have already stuck up their hand and say, I want to commit. We're not looking for short-term commitment right. or something like that. That's a long-term commitment. And we're looking for people who feel a calling on their lives.
This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. On this program, Bram spends time with the people who've been called to share the love of Jesus Christ in the mission field. Abandonment of infants in South Africa is, unfortunately, a common occurrence. Many of these children are left to die or simply abandoned in dust bins, open fields, or public toilets. Well, in 1999, the Berea Baptist Mission Church said, something needs to be done. Under the leadership of Pastor Cheryl Allen, the church made a hole in their wall and a baby box was installed, allowing for mothers to leave their babies anytime, day or night, for the church to take care of them. Now, the moment a baby is placed, care workers on duty receive an electronic signal alerting them. The baby is taken in and the anonymity of the donor ensured. This ministry is called Door of Hope. I'm Frank Montenegro. Today, Bram is joined by his daughter Dempsey as they bring us the fourth part of a conversation with Richard Allen of Door of Hope Ministries.
We're back for another day to talk about Door of Hope here, and this series of programs have been really enlightening for me, Richard. And Dempsey's going to join us today to talk more about the Hope Village. We left off last program talking about building the village one brick at a time. Welcome back to tell us more about this story, my friend.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Dempsey, thank you for stepping in with us because you spent time at the Door of Hope Village last year. So welcome to this program.
Thank you.
Now, we talked about the building one brick at a time as being kind of a metaphor for getting in there, get your hands dirty. You're literally doing this. You're not just building the village one brick at a time. You're building the bricks one at a time. Tell me about how you're actually getting people involved with building the materials that will build this village.
So as we've looked at this and tried to think of it strategically, how we're going to accomplish this development of this entire village, we've looked at different options available to us. And one of the novel ideas that's been developed in South Africa, interestingly enough, comes from Cape Town. And it's this new form of brick making, which is essentially using interlocking bricks. And the easiest way to explain what interlocking bricks are is it's like building with a set of Lego. And so the bricks fit into each other, which obviously make it a lot more or a lot easier to use.
And they're bigger than what we consider a brick to be. They're more like a block size, and they have some voids in them as well.
Yeah. So if you look at a normal size brick, these would probably be about the equivalent of 8 of those bricks on top of each other.
They've got some kind of crenellated top and bottom to them that will interlock with each other.
That's it. Okay. And so with the system, we have some modules that we are given. And we use these molds, that's probably the word I was looking for, where we can put these molds together and we create a concrete mixture using the teams or whoever is there. We have local teams, international teams that come out. We create this concrete mixture and then we pour it into these molds that we've put together, that we've oiled and primed, ready for this. And it's a simple case of setting up a bit of a brick making, you know, factory line, as it were, having people performing different functions within that, and pouring these molds, letting them set for a couple of days, taking them out of those molds, and then being concrete, you let them cure for another 28 days until they reach their full strength.
So if you have a team that's coming in internationally to help you with a project, they might be doing some assembly of the materials in preparation for the next teams that might come a month later to use that material to build the next section of a building.
And we're getting into the stage now where we would have had some teams from previously that have built bricks. And so when new teams come, they may make bricks themselves. But those bricks will get used maybe a couple of months down the line.
It's kind of like priming a pump. When you go there and get a drink out of a well, you have to actually save some water for the next prime.
Yeah. And so those teams, when they do come, they may make some of those bricks for future, but then there are bricks that are already available for them to use to maybe then erect the walls of the house and to put the Lego blocks on top of each other, as it were, So it's a nice way to get people, anybody involved. We've had a lot of women of all ages come in. We've had men of all ages. We had one team where there were, it comprised about 10 ladies of different ages, and we had three men in that team. One of the men was in his mid-70s, and that team made the most amount of bricks out of any team that we've had, 1,700 blocks in, wow, in the space of a few days. So it really is, I mean, it is hard work. I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah. It takes some sweat and some energy and effort, but it's doable.
Yeah.
And people can come without any construction experience or knowledge. We can give them some initial training. We have people that we employ that work with the teams, that are working alongside them, that supervise and are literally getting dirty with them, building and making these bricks. And anybody can basically do it.
So we'll add that as kind of a value-added option for folks that are sponsoring our project this month. We want to invest in one of the new homes in this new Door of Hope Village. And we're encouraging our givers, in response to the relationship that we've had with Hope, with Door of Hope over the years, to invest in our partnership together and to send as much as we can to see maybe an entire home built this year. It would be our hope and our joy to do so. And these teams then come in from other parts of the world, and maybe some folks from America might want to be part of some of those teams. Dempsey, about 2.5 years ago, you were down there in South Africa to see the work firsthand. You were there at the Door of Hope Village when many of these new projects were just getting off the ground. So what kind of people did you see, and from where did they come?
When I was at the Door of Hope Village, I think it was still being called Hope Village, and it was still very conceptual. I remember Richard walking me through pretty much the whole space, and I could see in his mind the things that were already there, but they weren't there physically. And so it's been really neat to see some of the pictures and to hear you talking about the things that have been happening over the last couple of years and seeing a lot of those things come to be in reality. When I was there, there was a team from Holland who I think you have said has come back several times.
Yeah.
And they were not even working on any of the homes yet. They were just kind of helping rehab one of the existing structures, which you just showed us pictures of as well, which seems to be functioning now as its own space, which is exciting to me. Because I remember
Childhood Development Center now.
Yeah.
It used to be just a barn.
Yeah, there was plaster flying and paint splattering, and it was hard to visualize, but I could tell that you could see where it was going. So that's neat.
So what kind of people are you coaching in the past few years, Richard? What people are coming from? Which countries? I heard Holland. What else?
Yeah, I think primarily the States. We've got a lot of relationships and networks built in the States. So I'd say the majority of our support and teams and volunteers come from the stateside. But in terms of our volunteer program at the baby houses, we've had, I think we've actually got a couple of ladies now from South America. Mm-hmm. There's one from Colombia who's with us presently. We've had a number come from Europe and Great Britain. So a number of British ladies have come over. We've had people from Germany and Netherlands, all over the place. In terms of our teams, as has been mentioned, the team from Holland have come out. There's possibilities of some teams coming from maybe New Zealand and Australia. But like I say, most of the support is stateside at this point.
That's great.
Which we're really appreciative of.
Which is one of the reasons why you want to open an office here in the States. You can get closer to your people that have invested in you so far and build those relationships over the years to come. I'm excited about that too, because I get to have closer contact now with your people.
Yeah.
Even on a similar time zone, so we can chat about how the progress is going and get more reports along the way. The village you're building, this Hope Village we discussed and talked about yesterday, is meant to be a holistic environment, a true village in the sense that it has all the things necessary to mature people to be productive and honest and upright citizens in their country, but also because you're investing in the kingdom of God, the young people coming through this will become Christian leaders, people that if they acknowledge Jesus as their Lord and pursue that faith are going to become great strongholds of the faith and great builders of the kingdom in the future. And I know you're ready to turn them loose on the world as soon as you can get them out the doors to go do great things for God. So you see a mission vision in your own mind through these children. So tell me about the first things you want to get built and where you're excited to see these teams participate in helping you make it happen.
So I think the way that we see it working out from this point on, obviously this development is going to happen over a number of years. We're talking about numerous buildings going up, from multiple houses to school buildings, to office buildings, to preschool buildings, medical facility buildings. So as you can hear, it's not a small scale project. So we have to be realistic with the timelines that we're looking at. So we're working on a phase by phase kind of design approach or development approach, I should say. And so phase by phase, we will develop it, as you mentioned earlier, one brick at a time as well. Mm-hmm. And as the Lord provides and leads, I think we can probably also work at a healthy pace mm-hmm. in terms of setting good foundations for the ministry and for what this village is going to look like. So we recognize that it is going, you know, one day at a time, one brick at a time.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. There's a lot more coming up, so please stay with us. Now, if you've missed any part of today's broadcast, you can listen again anytime when it's convenient for you just by opening up a browser on your computer, smartphone, or tablet and going to CompassionRadio.com. While you're there, check out our newsletter to find out more about this ministry. And go ahead and take a look at all the other great resources at CompassionRadio.com.
Friends, since 1999, Compassion Radio and its partners, that means you, have been doing something extraordinary. We've reached out in very practical ways to save the lives of abandoned babies in South Africa. Now, there are orphanages all over the world. Why this one? Well, because of a singularly amazing family and a marvelous transformational idea. And the idea was this: make it easier to save a life than to waste a life. Well, on the surface, that sounds like a ridiculous mission statement, but consider this. At the end of the 20th century, at the height of the AIDS crisis in South Africa, dozens of babies were being abandoned by mothers with no hope each and every month. Being infected and outcast, often addicted to drugs and unable to afford to care for their newborn, and facing arrest if they tried to give up their babies to authorities, the desperate took desperate measures. They were convinced their babies would die anyway. Until, that is, the Berea Baptist Church and the Allen family made that radical statement and did something about the crisis. Since the day they cut a hole in their church wall and put an incubator in it, they've rescued thousands of infants from certain death. No longer would a hopeless mother have to add murder to her burden of guilt. You, friends, had compassion on both mother and child through your generous giving. I'm asking you again for it now. The reason is obvious. There's still a need. And the work of Door of Hope keeps getting better. The new Hope Village is under construction, and when it's done, hundreds of kids not adopted will be raised in family groups in a nurturing community with its own playgrounds, church, elementary, and trade schools. Door of Hope showed us how to save a life once. Now they're showing us how to save lives time and time again, and as a result, saving generations. Will you give generously this year? It's our 20th anniversary of this project. And here's the best part. One of our generous Compassion Radio partners is providing a special matching challenge grant. If you give, they will match your gift, but only during the current month. $4,000 has been set aside for this special matching grant for the month of February. I'm asking you to make sure that every dime of that challenge grant is at least doubled or multiplied many times over. So give today. Here are four ways you can do just that. Call 1-800-868-2478 or go online to CompassionRadio.com right now to make your gift. Or send your gift by mail to Compassion Radio, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And lastly, and maybe best of all, you can donate in under a minute by simply texting KIDS to 53445. Thank you, friends, for helping Door of Hope save a whole new generation of precious children with your generous gift today.
Celebrating 75 years in Christian broadcasting, this is Compassion Radio.
So we recognize that it is going, you know, one day at a time, one brick at a time. And so we're starting off by building our houses that down the line will eventually be the residential homes of the families that are going to be living at the village. But maybe initially in the first few years, we will have a kind of a multi-purpose dynamic to those houses. So as we build them, we may have, for example, one house would be used as a team accommodation house. Yeah. So as teams are coming through, that house can be allocated to hosting teams, for example.
You had mentioned before having this idea of having investment families move into your village as well. And I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about that, because you said before that one of the first families, besides yourself and your brother and others that are already living there, one of the first groups that would move on site would be an investment family. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means and kind of what the idea is for having those people there?
Yeah. And that's a very interesting idea that's behind that. And I probably have to take a bit of a step back just to put you in the picture as to mm-hmm. where that comes from. As we've looked at just the residential care of children throughout the world, we've seen certain pitfalls that others have maybe fallen into. And we're saying we want to learn from other people's mistakes and where they've maybe made some errors. And so as we've been engaging in that space and thinking about not just the village for, you know, next year or the year after, but how are we seeing this village play out in 10 years' time, in 15 years' time? So it's all fine and well when the children are toddlers, but what is it going to look like when they are teenagers? Mm-hmm. And teenagers who are dealing with issues of abandonment and then just normal teenage issues that they have. And so if you're not intentional about your strategy with that and creating a healthy environment, that can become quite quickly a very unhealthy environment when you potentially have scores of teenage children living in a space together without good structures and good environment in place.
So there could be a toxic boarding school environment there if you don't get intentional about developing units of people
exactly.
that care deeply about each other.
Exactly. And so as we were thinking in that space and I was praying one day, I felt the Lord say to me, there's the adage that says it takes a village to raise a child. Hmm. Now, we all know that adage. Yeah. So I was kind of thinking, well, what does that mean for us? And I felt the Lord say, create that village. Once again, nothing necessarily unique, but as I thought about it more and brought it before the Lord, I felt him say, you know, what did a village used to look like 150 years ago? And that was a close-knit community of people where you had aunts and uncles, grannies and grandpas, looking out for each other, a kind of a close-knit community of people that were extra eyes and ears, extra role models to those children. And they were supporting each other and helping to raise the children of that community mm-hmm. together. And so I thought, what could that look like for us at the village? And the thought that came to me was, wouldn't it be fantastic if we could invite mature Christian families to consider coming and being a part of the village community, to come and be those aunts and uncles, to come and be those grannies and grandpas. So for retired folks to invest the remaining years of their life into raising orphan children. And so that we could create a community where we have those extra eyes and ears, we have those extra role models, where we can create a community that supports each other and comes together as a community to raise orphan children. And so that's essentially the investment families. What we term investment families is inviting those mature Christian families to come and be a part of that community.
Are you seeing a large range of ages of potential investment families? Like young couples just starting out and others that are retired, maybe some career people that have children?
We are. The very encouraging thing is seeing a bunch of people that have already stuck up their hand and say, I want to commit to that. Because we're not looking for short-term commitment
right.
for something like that. That's a long-term commitment. And we're looking for people who feel a calling on their lives to step into that space. And so I've met with, in my travels now in the States on this trip, a young couple that are working towards that. They are being intentional in the space they're in right now with their studies and their work environment. And we journeying together to say in two and a half, 3 years' time, they are going to be one of our investment families and they're going to come and live at the village. And what is that going to look like? We've had some retirement couples that have stuck up their hand and say, you know what, I can see myself doing that for my retirement years.
So this is not necessarily, you're not necessarily inviting people to come and work for you. This is more of, this is an organic kind of movement that you're asking people to make towards deeper community. And so
some of these investment families then might actually have careers outside the complex and come back at the end of the day like any parent would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've seen quite a complexity of of family dynamics and individual involvement at the village, where we could have a scenario of an investment family where, you know, both mom and dad are working off-site in some kind of secular job or whatever it is, and they're just a part of our community mm-hmm. and investing into the lives of orphan children through various programs that we mm-hmm. will have set up. Or we could have a scenario where maybe one of the couple is working for Door of Hope, maybe a teacher in our school down the line, yeah. Or whatever it may be, and the other spouse is working off-site. So there's a number of different scenarios that yeah. we would consider and look at. And I think that would just add to the unity in diversity that we are looking to achieve, mm-hmm. and that will lead to a healthy environment and a stimulating environment for our children to grow up in.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things also that I think about when as you're talking about this is, and you've mentioned this, the idea of not wanting it to be a bubble that's, you know, maybe an unrealistic lens that they're looking through towards the outside world. And so I know that this is years probably down the line, but what are some other ways that you've been thinking of to kind of, you know, move children into the world in a natural and organic way, in a way that children who grow up in single or double parent households would be moving, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a very important thing that we've identified. We recognize there's going to be some kind of bubble culture, as it were, with what we're looking at doing. So therefore, we need to be very intentional about saying, how can we account for that? And how can we raise our children that it doesn't become this unhealthy bubble that they're growing up in? Mm-hmm. And so maybe just to answer your question on one level, we're saying that we don't want our children to grow up, even though they have, in many ways, through their start in life, being victims of their circumstances. We don't want to have them be raised with a victim mindset. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to be aware of and intentional from the outset. And so, for example, with the care that we're looking to provide for them, they are going to be a lot more privileged than many other children, probably mm-hmm. in South Africa and around. And so at age-appropriate times, we are going to have programs where we can take them on mission, mm. where wow. we can expose them to the needs that are maybe just down the road from them, where they can see, even though they have their challenges, they can see the difficulties that other people are facing. And I think through that exposure, helping them to process their own lives and helping them not to have that victim mindset, but to say, I am blessed on this level to kind of gain an attitude of gratitude, as it were, for what they have and their blessings. But then to have a perspective of saying, how can I be a blessing mm-hmm. to those people who are even less fortunate than I am? Yeah. And I think that's one idea of what we would look at.
Richard, I want to draw a close to this particular conversation and pick up for one more program with you about where we go from here. But I want to thank you again for opening your heart and your life with us, Compassion Radio. Dempsey, thank you for sharing your walkthrough, your experience of being there at the very beginning of where the hope was becoming realized there. Thank you for sharing your experience.
Thank you. God is good.
We'll hear more of this conversation next time on Compassion Radio. Now, if you've missed any part of today's broadcast, you can listen again anytime just by opening up a browser on your computer, smartphone, or tablet and going to CompassionRadio.com. And while you're there, check out our newsletter to find out more about this ministry. And please think about signing up for our email updates. Again, it's CompassionRadio.com. Now, if this broadcast is a blessing to you, would you please consider three things? First, please pray for us. Your prayers are vital to the effectiveness of this ministry. Second, would you please tell a friend about Compassion Radio? Sharing this broadcast will help us reach as many people as possible with the encouraging reports Bram brings us from the mission field all over the world. And finally, would you please consider supporting this ministry financially? Compassion Radio is 100% listener supported, so your gifts make it possible for us to continue. Now, there's a couple of ways you can get a hold of us. You can call us right now at 800-868-2425. 2478, or you can visit CompassionRadio.com. When you're there, just click the donate button. Again, it's 800-868-2478, or visit CompassionRadio.com. Now, if you'd really like to make your giving super easy, you can just text the word GIVE to 53445. That's the word GIVE, G-I-V-E, to 53445. And last but certainly not least, if you want to go old school and mail us your tax-deductible donation, great. Just send it to Compassion Radio at P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to listen. We are so thankful for you. Please be sure to join us again next time for more Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. This program is sponsored by Compassion Ventures Incorporated and your generous financial support.